CMU podcast in association with 7Digital.
This week, PRSV SoundCloud, Mega Upload, Tyler the Creator, and One Direction. I'm Andy Malt, editor of CMU. CMU's business editor, Chris Cook, is still in Edinburgh, unbelievably. How is it up there, Chris?
I don't know why it's unbelievable. Edinburgh still exists. I'm still living in it.
Maybe unbelievable was slightly over the top, especially as I knew you were going to be there.
So yes, the Edinburgh Festival is still, it's coming up to the climax weekend. It is the grand finale of the entire Edinburgh Festival this weekend. It all finishes with a big firework display on Monday night, so that's pretty much all that's left. 3 weeks is sort of winding down. Our last weekly edition is out. Our last podcast will go out tomorrow. I've just got to do one more interview for that. I'm interviewing the other Chris Cook later on this afternoon. You know how there's a magician called Chris Cook who performs at the Fringe?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm interviewing him later.
You're going to interview him?
I am going to interview.
I thought you said you're going to see him.
No, I'm going to interview him.
Have you seen any shows?
I have seen very few shows so far, but I'm going to try and pack a big stack into the last few days. I have seen a couple. I went to a very interesting panel debate, but I haven't really properly seen the shows I promised myself I would see. So between now and the firework display, in amongst finishing off that last podcast and sending out the last few editions of the 3 weeks daily email. Oh, we have our awards. That's the 3 weeks editors awards on Saturday morning. But in amongst all of that, somewhere I'm going to see some shows. So next week, when we talk, and I'm no longer in Edinburgh, although I won't be in London, but I will no longer be in Edinburgh, then hopefully at that point I can say, yeah, I saw some great shows. This is what they're called, but the festival's over, so you can't see them now. So that would be good. Be a good service for our listeners.
Well, I expect a full report next week. But until then, let's just talk about music industry stuff, shall we?
If you insist.
Well, I don't insist, but we might as well as we're here.
It's been a very quiet news week in the music industry. And when I first put together the list of things that we might want to talk about yesterday afternoon, I don't know how we're going to fill a whole podcast. But then a very interesting story broke overnight, and then a big story broke this morning. So it's gone from being a very content-light podcast to actually being quite a lot to talk about. So let's talk about it.
Yeah, because PRS suing SoundCloud is not a small story. I would say that is quite a big story.
It is indeed. So as we record this podcast on Thursday afternoon, an email went out this morning to members of the Performing Rights Society, so thousands and thousands of songwriters and publishers across the UK, alerting them to the fact that the PRS is beginning legal proceedings against the big bad SoundCloud, which is interesting because the rumour for the last week has been that Universal Music, who have also had problems with SoundCloud in the past, are on the verge of licensing them. So the record industry over here is sort of making good with SoundCloud. The publishers and the songwriters over here, they're going legal.
Now, there have been tensions over the fact that SoundCloud is unlicensed for a long time, though this is the first time it's gone this far. And PRS's statement on the matter is fairly, it doesn't pull any punches. It says, you know, we've been telling SoundCloud for years that they require a license. They've been saying, no, we don't. And to prove that they do, they go in legal.
They are going to take them to court and test that theory. So, yes, so...
Well, they might.
Yes. Almost certainly this will be settled, not least because we know that SoundCloud are trying to get licensed. I mean, a few years ago, SoundCloud seemed to have no interest in getting licenses from either the record industry or the publishers. They were very much sort of, well, we're a content distribution platform. Our customers are content producers and we provide streaming services to those people on a freemium level and a premium level. We're not we don't need licenses. But then in recent years, and especially the last 18 months, SoundCloud has been trying to reinvent itself, not least because it needs to make money. And it turns out that selling subscriptions to content makers to upload their content is not enough to allow SoundCloud to grow and become a profitable business in its own right. So we sense that SoundCloud's financial backers have been putting pressure on the company to find a way of actually monetizing its content from the consumer end. So as well as selling services to content creators, how can we monetize the fact that we have this massive community of music fans coming to SoundCloud every day? Is there a subscription service we can sell to the fans? Is there an advertising model? Probably a combination of the two. SoundCloud did used to like to call themselves the YouTube of audio, although that was never their business model in the early days.
No.
But in more recent years, that is what they're aiming for. And so They are starting to get the labels on board for both an ad-funded system, which has sort of been slowly growing over the last year, and also a promised subscription service, which we don't really know what that's going to look like, but there's talk of a subscription service too. So that Warner Music signed up to that. I think they were pretty much the first to get on board. Then Merlin, which obviously represents a lot of the independents, got on board. As I say, rumour has it Universal may be close to a deal. Sony probably a little bit further away from a deal. But the labels, who had become very critical of SoundCloud in recent years for exactly the reasons stated in PRS's letter this morning, do seem to have come to a deal and said, okay, let's forgive the past copyright infringement. Let's do a deal. Let's turn your millions and millions of users into a new revenue stream. Whereas it seems, well, what does this tell us? PRS sort of in that letter are saying that their problem is with SoundCloud's existing business model rather than any future business model. They talk about SoundCloud's current operations in the UK and Ireland. But is this sort of part of a negotiating tactic that perhaps SoundCloud have gone to PRS and said, well, we want to use a license on new service? We know that they've done some deals with some of the publishers in the US through the trade body for publishers. So they have been talking to publishers as well as labels. But it may well be that perhaps they're coming to PRS and saying, well, okay, we want a license moving forward, but we want you to forget about everything that's gone before. And this is PRS saying, now, hang on a second, you've been running a music service for 5 years without a license. We need to make good on the past before we agree something on the future. This is me wildly speculating, but it is a very interesting development, given that some of the industry, who has had just as much complaints about the fact that SoundCloud took so long to get round to turning itself into a music service that paid money to the music industry as well as providing a great promotional platform, the labels have been saying that they do seem to be slowly coming round to sort of doing a deal with SoundCloud. Yet PRS are talking about going legal over the past squabble.
Yeah, well, I think we have possibly discussed this before, but obviously SoundCloud's problem is that SoundCloud's taken a long time to work out what it is. The service it is today is not the service it was launched at. It's not what it was intended to be. And it's sort of, I mean, obviously PRS noted that, you know, they have 175 million users now, and it's really been shaped by how those users use it rather than what the founders of SoundCloud intended it to be used for, which, you know, is often the mark of a quality service. You know, it becomes something, but their problem therefore is they're not like Spotify. They didn't come along and go, right, we want to play 30 million tracks to people who want to listen to them, so we need licenses for that. SoundCloud came in with a different idea that wasn't a streaming service in that sense, and that is now causing it considerable problems.
Yeah, and one of the problems there, I mean, as you say, on one level, it's great that they evolved with the creators and with the users, and they've built a service which remains, I mean, the service itself remains certainly popular with real music fans who like to discover new stuff. And actually, most artists, when they've not got their sort of licensing royalties hat on, they like the experience, they like the fact it's so embeddable, it's so easy to share playlists and tracks from SoundCloud. They like the user interface, they like the way it looks. But the first problem is, because it's taken them quite a long time to get to where they now are, they spent an awful lot of money to get to this point. And they raised a lot of money, and they spent that money building the platform to where they are now. The problem is, if SoundCloud just wants to become a Spotify, you need incredibly deep pockets to do that. We know that you need to have millions and millions and millions that you can write in advances, and that you can put guarantees in place so that if your business runs at a loss for 3 or 4 years, the labels and the publishers are still getting their money. And SoundCloud just don't have that money anymore to be able to commit to that kind of deal. So they've had to go to the labels and the publishers with a different business model, and something more akin to the YouTube business model, the way YouTube is licensed. The problem with that is that although YouTube is licensed and the labels and the publishers have been working with YouTube for years now, they've sort of been reluctantly working with YouTube, and especially in the last 18 months, as I think we've talked about on the podcast, the labels and the publishers have started to diss YouTube, despite it still being a very important marketing channel and indeed a revenue generator. Yet lots of people in the industry are dissing the YouTube model, which then makes it tricky for SoundCloud to come to the table and say, well, we can't afford to be a Spotify. We don't even want to be a Spotify. We think we've got something that's different. It's more like YouTube. Can we license more like YouTube? And that's been a tricky conversation to have. Although, I mean, it's impressive they got the label deals in place that they have. I know for a fact that one of the big independents was getting very annoyed with SoundCloud because they reached out to SoundCloud back in the early days. They said, we love your service. We love your platform. Let's have a conversation. Let's see if we can work out a way of making this a licensed music service. And then SoundCloud just ignored those letters and ignored those letters and ignored those letters. And then suddenly 18 months ago, SoundCloud then emails this label and says, oh, we want to talk about a licensing deal. And the label were like, well, you've ignored us for 4 or 5 years. Why should we now cut you some favours? Although that independent is part of Merlin, and as far as I'm aware, is planning on working with the Merlin license. So the enemies in the label world have forgiven SoundCloud over those frustrations because ultimately they recognise it's a great platform and it has a massive user base. Will the publishers do the same? Is this a negotiating tactic on PRS's part to try and force SoundCloud's hand or you know, are they actually going to see this through?
Well, I mean, it does seem like a negotiating tactic to an extent. I mean, they did say in the statement that you know, it's been a difficult decision. And obviously, negotiations or attempts at negotiations have been going on for quite, you know, several years now. And, you know, the PRS sort of framed it as, well, we keep just saying, you know you need a license. And SoundCloud keeps saying, no, no, we don't. And as you say now, you know, it's obviously SoundCloud is trying to become licensed now. So that itself isn't necessarily the issue. The issue is that SoundCloud is trying to say, well, let's just pretend that this is brand new and we'll start from kind of a zero point here and forget everything else. And, you know, PRS mentioned this, you know, it submitted a list of 4,500 works that it represents or members it, from its members that it represents, of which SoundCloud said it had removed 250, although why that is relevant is unclear. And PRS did say it would prefer to license, you know, those works rather than go to court. But SoundCloud sort of pushed it into this situation.
Yeah, I mean, in the statement, PRS were definitely trying to make it sort of this is SoundCloud's decision. And if SoundCloud decide to pull all our songs off their service because of this litigation, well, that's SoundCloud's decision, not ours. I mean, it is interesting the fact that they mention a couple of times in the letter that there's even a dispute here about whether or not SoundCloud needed a license for what has come to now. And that means that part of this is the old safe harbours debate. If this was to get to court, I'm pretty certain that it won't, but if it was to get to court, it would be a really interesting test case in Europe, because I imagine what SoundCloud are saying is we're like YouTube, we're like Grooveshark. You know, these safe harbours exist in law that say that if users upload content to a platform without the copyright owner's permission, but the platform itself doesn't, because SoundCloud has never pumped a load of content in itself. All the content that's on there has been uploaded, I mean, a lot of it, by creators and labels, or by users, by fans. And SoundCloud would say, well, we haven't uploaded the content, users have. We're not liable for copyright infringement in that scenario because of the so-called safe harbours that exist in American law and in European law, which were designed to protect digital companies whose users use their platforms or their channels to distribute content without license. So they'll say, we're protected by these safe harbours. We had a takedown system. We've always had a takedown system. You know, if you wanted your content removed, just tell us and we'll remove it. You know, it was your responsibility as PRS to do that and you didn't. And therefore, there has been no copyright infringement. There was no need for a licence up until this point now that we're reinventing our service and we're starting to pull in content from labels. Now we need a licence, but previously we didn't. And therefore, what are you talking about? And that's sort of what the dispute is here. And as it may well be, a deal is done for SoundCloud moving forward. Part of that deal is, well, we just forget everything that's gone before. Some money would presumably change hands from SoundCloud to PRS and they would get on with it. But if it did get to court, it would be a test. Well, is SoundCloud protected by those safe harbours? What does that mean? Was it PRS's responsibility to have that content removed in the past and the fact that they didn't means that there isn't a case or whatever? And those safe harbours are a big discussion point in the music industry at the moment. The labels and the publishers want the law rewritten, certainly in Europe, to clarify when those safe harbours can and can't be used. So if it did get to court, it would be a fascinating test case on the whole safe harbours thing here in Europe. All the test cases on this, I think, in the music space to date have been over in the US. It probably won't get to court, though, so we probably won't have that test case. But it is interesting, and it's interesting watching the response of songwriters, because obviously a lot of songwriters, certainly singer-songwriters, use SoundCloud to distribute and market their content. And if there was a sudden blockade, if SoundCloud's response to this is to just remove all PRS members' content off its platform, well, that's a bit of a pain if you're a singer-songwriter who is using SoundCloud to promote your work. Although quite a few songwriters on the social networks seem to be saying, about time, I'm glad PRS are standing up for us. So I'm not sure all songwriters will be with SoundCloud on this one.
No, but I mean, I suppose, you know, there's another level of problem is that kind of PRS and the labels will see this as something that should pay. But if you are a musician who's just putting your music up there, you're kind of putting your music up there because it provides you a player that you can, you know, have your music played on. You're not necessarily putting it up there thinking, I'm going to get paid for this. This is a more complicated debate than perhaps with other services.
It is true, but then I suppose as a new songwriter, when you join PRS, you give PRS the right to represent your performing rights. And it's an exclusive right. It's for PRS to negotiate. And PRS would always say, you know, we're here to protect those smaller songwriters who might, on their own, get bamboozled by companies who would say, oh, sign away this. By uniting, we can make a stand. Whether or not SoundCloud will comply, it remains to be seen. So far, they've not commented. Could it end up being a YouTube gamer-style standoff? Obviously, in Germany, songs which are represented by Gamer can't appear on YouTube because Gamer, the German equivalent of PRS, has never licensed YouTube. Will that happen here? There was actually a standoff between PRS and YouTube back in the day. It was very short-lived. There was talk of all PRS content coming off YouTube during that. I don't think it ever happened. I don't think any content ever got removed, but there was talk of it. So it'll be interesting whether that will be SoundCloud's response to say, right, then PRS will just remove all your content off our platform, and then you can deal with all those angry songwriters and labels who can no longer use their service. Although that would be quite a gamble for SoundCloud at a point when they're desperately trying to convince investors and the world at large that they are now working with the industry on an all-new business model that will work for everybody. So, interesting times ahead.
Okay, on to our second story this week, and we're going back to Mega Upload, which dominated last week's podcast so very, very much. And it's a development in the story we were talking about last week involving data that was held on Mega Upload's servers at the point it was shut down 3.5 years ago.
Yeah, so a couple of updates to the story that we discussed at length last week. A quick recap. A company called Carpathia Hosting, an American server company, didn't host all of the Mega Upload content that had been uploaded when Mega Upload existed as a file transfer service, but it certainly hosted a lot of it. When the US authorities shut Mega Upload down, all those servers were just switched off and people lost access to their content. They're now in a warehouse. They've not been touched in those 3 years. A lot of the content on there is copyright infringing content. That's why the US authorities shut Mega Upload down. But there's also plenty of content on there which is legit, you know, users who are using it as a file storage system for their own content rather than ripped off content, and those people lost access to their content too. One of the server companies Mega Upload used in Europe has deleted all of the former Mega Upload content that it once sat on, which is a bit of a pain if you're one of the ex-customers who are desperately hoping to get your photos or your videos or your, you know, audio tracks back. Carpathia have not done that yet, but Carpathia was bought recently by a new company called QTS, I think, and they want to wipe them. They're saying it's pointless us sitting on these servers, having to pay for a warehouse to store them. We can't use those servers to, you know, to put new customers' content on. Please, Mr. Judge, let us just wipe these servers and put it all behind us. And that was sort of where we were at last week. And two people have intervened in the last 7 days on this.
Yes, because as we discussed last week, there's a protection order on Carpathia's servers, which means they can't be wiped currently. So they're just gathering dust in a warehouse currently. There were two responses, one from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which has been involved in this debate before and has been representing a particular Mega Upload user, Carl Goodwin, who was a sports journalist, I think a local sports journalist, who had a load of video of sports matches stored on Mega Upload with no backup, and those videos are now locked in those Carpathia servers somewhere, and he can't get access to them. And so the EFF has been for 3 years now trying to help him get that data back, unsuccessfully currently, but they kind of use, I mean, they're using him as the poster boy for the victims of the Mega Upload takedown. And the EFF said in a statement this week that Carpathia's new owners, QTS, took the opportunity to remind the court that it's still paying to store and preserve the servers it can't dispose of. So we took this opportunity to remind the court that Mr. Goodwin and those like him still need to get their files back.
So yeah, that's basically the EFF saying to the court, do not let Carpathia delete these servers. Those files still need to be returned to their rightful owners. We discussed last week the challenges of you know, who is it that's going to go into those servers and pick out all the copyright infringing content and delete it, and then say, okay, Kyle and all the rest of you, here's your legit files to get back. It's quite a task. But the EFF remain resolute that that must happen, and that it would set dangerous precedents if the courts just allowed Carpathia's new owners to delete those files. They weren't the only people responding to court this week. We also had legal representation from Mega Upload themselves, or the former managers of Mega Upload, who are facing both criminal and civil cases against them in relation to their former business. And those lawyers also went to court and said, no, 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 no. What was the reasons they were giving?
Well, that was slightly different. Their reasoning was that the all the files, legal or otherwise, on those servers are evidence in the still looming case against Kim.com and Mega Upload's founders, and should therefore be held to be used in a case if and when it comes to court in the US. Because they're saying it was actually when the US authorities took down Mega Upload, they took a slice of data from the servers, which they would then use as a kind of, you know, they take a cross-section of the data and they'd show, like, in that cross-section, these files are illegal, these files are illegal. You can see what sort of balance there is on the servers. And the lawyers are saying, well, that's who's to say that one slice of a huge amount of data is representative of the whole thing. We need to look at all these servers together. And so they should not be wiped. They should be kept in that warehouse for the time being.
And it was interesting, there was an implication in their submission to court that the US authorities have been very blasé about all this lost data and sort of said, oh, well, Kyle Goodwin should have backed up his files, shouldn't he? Which has never seemed particularly fair. And in this latest court submission, the Mega Upload lawyers were almost sort of, I don't know, they outright accused the government of doing this, but they were certainly implying it, that saying, well, perhaps one of the reasons why the US authorities have been so blasé about this lost data to date is because actually they would rather it all be deleted, because if there was only that one slice of former Mega Upload data left to be presented in court, then that would aid the US government's case against Kim.com and the other Mega Upload founders. So it'll be interesting to see what the judge now does. The proposal from the lawyers for Mega Upload was that the US government should buy these servers off Carpathia. They are saying, yes, it's okay, QTS are probably right, it shouldn't be their responsibility to have to carry on paying to store these servers. The government, as it's there, their case that they're leading, it's their criminal prosecution, they should buy these servers off Carpathia. They should pay to store them until this case gets to court. God knows when that will be. It's already been running for 3.5 years now. It could be another 3.5 years before this reaches any sort of court action, but that the US government should take the hit and go and store those servers. So I'm assuming that in the next week, the US government will submit a paper to court saying, no, we're not doing that. Either force QTS to carry on keeping these servers or just let them be deleted. We're happy with the evidence that we've already gathered. So, yes, more rumblings in that ongoing Mega Upload lost data story.
Now, earlier this week, Tyler, the Creator, cancelled some upcoming UK and Ireland dates, including Reading and Leeds festivals, citing, and I quote, circumstances. Subsequently, he has revealed what those circumstances were, which is, it's more helpful. He said it in a tweet, and I'm not going to shout, even though it's in all caps. Based on lyrics from 2009, I am not allowed in the UK for 3 to 5 years, although I was there 8 weeks ago. That is why the shows were cancelled.
Yes, so we've had clarification that it was a visa issues. Those were the circumstances. And obviously, it would look like he was facing visa issues in Australia, where he was due to play relatively recently. Various campaigners who object to some of his lyrics, particularly some of his early lyrics, calling them misogynistic and homophobic, said that we shouldn't let Tyler, the Creator, into Australia. Actually, it was never entirely clear whether or not that opposition was successful. I'm not sure that the visa was necessarily denied in Australia, but nevertheless, Tyler and his promoter decided that they didn't want the tour to go ahead with all that controversy, so the Australian dates were cancelled. But it's turned out that it wasn't just Australia where there were visa issues for the old Odd Future. Do we call him the leader of Odd Future, Tyler? He always feels like he's the leader to me.
We can do.
So, yes, the UK authorities don't want him in the country. And the Home Office this morning, as we record this, they said they don't comment on specific cases, although they certainly didn't deny what Tyler, the creator, and his manager are saying, which is that he has been denied. And the quote they gave, let me read this: "Coming to the UK is a privilege, and we expect those who come here to respect our shared values. The Home Secretary has the power to exclude an individual if she considers that his or her presence in the UK is not conducive to the public good, or their exclusion is justified on public policy grounds." So as far as I can see, what we should take from that is, yeah, Tyler, the creator, is banned from Britain because he's a naughty boy.
He doesn't share our collective values. But his manager, Christian Clancy, has written something more detailed on this than Tyler's one caps-heavy tweet, in which he said that, you know, it seems unfair that someone is kind of being blocked from coming to the UK now for things he said as an 18-year-old, kind of, you know, 6 years ago, and, you know, which he said were written in an alter ego, and he subsequently stopped writing lyrics like that and has kind of moved on and changed, you know, he sort of tried to address those themes in his lyrics and move on and grow as a person. He's saying Tyler's really grown as a person, and is very different now to how he was then, and has been to the UK, you know, 20 times in those intervening years without issue, and now suddenly is being blocked, seemingly out of nowhere.
It is interesting that suddenly there seem to be issues around this. I mean, obviously, you know, we know there have been controversies around his lyrics in the past. I mentioned in Australia, and there have been objections elsewhere. And we know that sometimes artists who have had particularly criminal charges against them, if they've been found guilty of a crime in their home country, that sometimes is enough to sort of block people from having visas to come and perform here in the UK. But it's interesting for the sort of the government to intervene on these grounds. Not defending some of those early lyrics necessarily, and indeed his manager in his post says he's not particularly defending those early lyrics either, but it does seem odd, yeah, that these are 6 year old tracks. I think, you know, it things at time, obviously Tyler, the creator, likes to sometimes wind people up. He sometimes says deliberately contentious things. Having said that, at the same time, he's also said much more positive things that seem to contradict the controversies of those early lyrics. And it does seem odd. I mean, it's the first two albums that apparently the offence has been taken, which are 5 or 6 years old now. So why now? What has happened now? And I think, you know, there is sort of a freedom of speech issue, which brings you to the thing I was doing here at the Edinburgh Festival, my free speech on free speech. And I think it's difficult.
I knew you'd get that in somehow.
Oh, well, there you go. It's not a plug because it's over. It's not that I'm trying to get you to come along because you can't come along. It happened. It's over. Although I might do it again in London, and I'll tell you about that when it's happening. But it is an interesting thing. I mean, there have been a number of protests in recent years. I mean, actually, the most vocal protests in the early days were against sort of dance hall artists who had particularly violent lyrics towards either women or to the gay community. And you saw quite a few protests that made it almost impossible to book those artists, because whenever it was announced that they were playing, there would be an uproar. People would say, well, we'll come and picket the show. And often the promoters or the venues would say, well, we can't be bothered with that hassle, so we weren't having them performing. So it is a tricky issue, but I think it's one thing for people to say, well, we're going to go and protest outside a venue, but to then actually do so in a way that stops the gig from going ahead, and for the, you know, for the Home Secretary to say, we're just not letting this guy into the country. I think that there are some free speech issues around that, particularly when, you know, it's they're sort of saying, oh, well, perhaps he's inciting hatred or whatever towards certain communities. And as I say, I'm not defending those early lyrics, but I think in the context of who he was then, how he performed them, what he has done since, I think to sort of ban him from performing in the country, for definite, criticise what he says, criticise what he performs, try and have a debate around the issues that he is raising through his music, but to just say you can't come to the UK does seem both a bit extreme, and as his manager has said, for this to happen now seems a bit odd. But no Tyler the Creator in the UK for the next few years, and certainly not at Reading and Leeds this weekend.
Yeah, we don't know if he has any right to appeal against this decision, or whether, you know, he'll now just write the UK off, as he seems to have done Australia, and just stick to the US for the time being. Although he does seem to like coming to the UK. Does come here, or was coming here, relatively frequently. So it might be that he pushes to lift this ban, if possible. I mean, 3 to 5 years seems quite a long time. I mean, if the whole thrust of his manager's statement was like, in the last 5 years, he's really changed as a person and is now writing very different lyrics. If they're saying we're giving you 3 to 5 years to write different lyrics, well, he's already doing that.
Yeah, perhaps they think in those 3 to 5 years, he will just become a completely laid back, relaxed, inoffensive, soul artist, and then we'll let him in. So perhaps he has to make a really sort of, uninteresting, middle of the road, Ronan Keating style pop record, and then we'll let him back into the United Kingdom. We'll see.
Well, that's something to look forward to. Just time to look through some of the stories that didn't make the cut for longer discussion this week. Spotify has apologised about new privacy terms that everyone went a bit crazy about last week and said that it would only access data on a user's device after getting explicit permission.
Yes, Spotify has updated its terms and conditions. Some people spotted that it was asking for or demanding that it would have access to your photos and to other parts, to your location and to your address book. And people were like, this is Spotify invading my life. I'm cancelling my subscription. So they wheeled out Daniel Ek to say, no. We'll tell you when we start invading your life. It's not happening overnight. We've communicated this badly. Forgive us. Carry on subscribing. People seem to be placated by Daniel Ek's sudden little, we screwed up the communications on that statement. So,
Some people. I mean, I saw a lot of people discussing this, and it just seems like a bit of a weird one because, especially the terms and conditions that, like, most apps have. Also, I think you can see quite clearly why Spotify would need a lot of the things it was asking for, like its location. They just announced a thing that will play you a constant stream of music based on your location. So that would be why it would need access to your location data. Also, as it becomes more used in the car, like there are a lot of people complaining about it's asking for access to your microphone. I listen to Spotify in the car quite a lot. If I could shout at Spotify to play something, that would be quite useful.
Look at you defending Spotify. I mean, it is one of those things, isn't it? I mean, anyone who is a Google user, like a Google Mail, Google Apps user, they already know everything. So, you have no secrets. There are people out there who know everything you do, every web page you look at, every email you send. So, just give up on it and let Spotify have it. And they might be able to recommend you some more relevant tunes on the back of it. But anyway, let's pretend we're all over that now because Daniel Ek has spoken.
Next, Sony Music acquired Century Media Records, which is, if you don't know, a kind of, could we say legendary? Let's say legendary. Legendary German metal label.
Iconic.
Iconic, yeah, that would do.
Let's go with iconic. This wasn't really much of a surprise because the co-founder of the company, Robert Kampf, gave an interview to a metal site earlier in the year in which he said, I'm selling the label. And he was quite explicit, I'm selling it to a major.
Yeah, although he did say that Universal was the most likely partner and he has sold to Sony.
He did, although up until now, I think it was it Universal did their distribution in the Americas and Sony did their distribution in Europe and elsewhere. So it was like, okay, well, where do we change the situation? Actually, it probably was the other way around. I don't know. The point is, he was working with both Universal and Sony, so it was going to be one of those, and it ended up being Sony.
Talking of companies being bought, the agency group has been bought by United Talent Agency, giving the latter a much, much bigger music division.
Yes, UTA, as most people know it, is a very big agency in sort of acting and TV and movies. It did have a music division already, but not a particularly big one, whereas the agency group is a big booking agency in music and bigger now than it ever has been. They've bought up a lot of little agencies in recent years. So, the agency group is now basically the music department of UTA. So a big deal in the whole live booking agency bit of the business.
Sticking with acquisitions, although slightly different, Sony's legacy label has acquired Van Morrison's catalogue, although it's missing everything pre about 1971. So no Astral Weeks, which you'd think would be one of the key ones. Some of his latter material was quite good.
And it does include releases from his earlier band, Them, which actually precedes 1971. So it's his early work with Them, then a bit of a gap, and then everything post-1971, although Legacy, which is Sony's catalogue unit, were really bigging this up as being, you know, this is the most Van Morrison music that has ever been under one roof, and we'll be able to do lots of exciting stuff with it. So they were trying to you know, ignore the fact that a couple of the really big albums from the late 60s are not part of the deal.
And just finally here, going back to PRS again, which, rather than suing someone, has announced a new deal with Spotify.
Yeah, proof that PRS does like digital, just not SoundCloud. So PRS already had a deal with Spotify, but it has been renewed. And yeah, good for PRS, good for Spotify.
Okay, well, let's talk about One Direction then.
Why not?
Who, as predicted by me, are going to split up. Although I think, like Vince Cable, I have predicted the last 17 One Direction splits. But that's not important right now. They're going to end it all.
Yeah, predict any pop band is going to split long enough and eventually it will come true. Although I suppose two asides, you know, people who listen to this podcast regularly might remember that you said that they were going to split by the end of the year. And this is happening next March.
Well,
so I don't know whether that's because you
close.
Were wrong, or perhaps they were listening and they deliberately picked March just so you would be wrong. I think it's probably the latter.
Yeah.
I think they've deliberately gone with March just to screw up your prediction. Also, I'm sure the four remaining members of One Direction would like me to clarify that when you say they're splitting up, what they are doing is going on hiatus.
Yeah, although they are, I mean, you say it's... It's not happening until next March. So they do seem to be rushing to get out. They are going to release a fifth album, but they're not going to tour it.
Yes, have one last push, get some extra cash in with another full-length record coming out through Sony. But then, yes, not then embarking on a 12, 18-month tour. I think they all have various projects that they want to pursue. Needless to say, within hours of... This story actually broke in The Sun on Sunday afternoon, I think. Apparently there had been a meeting, and The Sun had found out that there had been a meeting. And there hasn't actually been an official statement from Psycho or their management team yet, although comments that all four members, or certainly three of them, have made on Twitter since, tell us that yes, a hiatus is happening, they are going to go on hold, and that of course has led to then chatter about how Harry Styles is already being, you know, the contracts are being written, and Sony are getting ready to put lots of energy behind the Harry Styles solo career. Well, I'm sure the last time we spoke about this, I sort of sense we talk about this too much on the podcast, because I'm pretty sure the last time we spoke about this, you said you didn't think that Harry Styles was going to be the Robbie Williams of One Direction, the one who was going to come out of this with the massive, sustainable solo career.
No. You said he wasn't. I said he was.
Well, I said he wasn't, or you said he wasn't. No, I said he was. You said he wasn't. There isn't time to go back and check. I'm pretty sure that not only did you get it wrong on when the hiatus was happening, you said that you didn't think it was Harry Styles who had the solo career. You thought it was, I don't know, Niall Horan. Or perhaps you were saying Zayn.
No, it was specifically Niall who I said didn't have a solo career.
Well...
Don't twist my words. This is very important.
I actually think you said... And we could go back and check this, but let's not. I think you said that you thought Zayn Malik had the solo career. I think that's how it all came up, because obviously, whatever happens, Zayn will get his solo career up and running before the other four.
That's true.
Unless any one of the other four is planning on bringing their solo album out before the hiatus next March. So who knows?
Well, who knows indeed. I think Harry will do all right. I think he'll be just fine.
Obviously, there were millions... Or maybe thousands. There were some One Direction fans who were distraught by all of this. I know this because various media outlets presented these distraught fans. And I think it was Louis Tomlinson had to take to Twitter to explain what hiatus means, which we're coming back. We're not gone for good. Although at least that's what they're saying. Simon Cowell then sort of said something which sort of implied, yeah, well, they would say that this is basically the end. Although clearly any pop band these days, they split, they go away for a few years, and then they come back and they do the reunion tour and they milk it all again for another 10 years. So I think they are clearly coming back at some point, but who knows how long the hiatus will last.
Well, probably, yeah. But I mean, like, you know, they're releasing a fifth album. I mean, releasing a fifth album and then not touring it. I mean, if you wanted a conspiracy theory, which, you know, we don't like conspiracy theories on this podcast, but if you wanted one, you could say that the fact that they were not touring it suggested that there was a contractual obligation album rather than anything else.
See, I have a feeling that they did a deal which was three albums, and then they did another three album deal. Now, obviously, album six will be a greatest hits album, so it may well be, yes, that is to fulfil their current commitments to Psycho. There's probably some kickbacks to fulfilling that contract before they go on hiatus. So, yeah, be interesting to see. Next week, I mentioned that I'm leaving Edinburgh this weekend after the big firework display. That's the only reason I've been here for the last month, waiting for the big firework display. But I'm not coming straight back to London, so next week I will continue to be slightly echoey and tinny because I will be recording on my laptop again before I finally arrive back in London, and me and Andy will actually be in the same room as each other once more. But
well, you might be.
On my trip back down, I am stopping off for a few days in the home of Harry Styles, the town from which he originates. So while I am there, I will do some digging and find out what is the grand plan.
You're going to go and ask his mum?
Not that he lives there anymore. His mum still lives quite nearby. I don't know where. She used to live right in the middle of the town. I think she now lives in a posh mansion somewhere in the countryside. But
So you might have to speak to her through the intercom.
I will go to the baker's where he famously used to work. And I will buy some nice bread rolls, and while I'm there, I will find out exclusively for you, listeners of the CMU podcast, what's next for Harry Styles post the One Direction hiatus.
I want you to go in and record a conversation with the people in the bakery for the podcast. Now I've said it, you have to do it.
Well, maybe I will, or maybe I will just bring you an ice bun back, because they do very good ice buns at Mandeville's in Holmes Chapel. So we'll see how it goes.
I want them to ice their opinion on Harry Styles' solo career into the bun.
Right. Well, that will be a good use of my time in my mid-country break before returning back to London for the... For the gallant return of the CMU podcast, with us both sounding like we're in the same room, because we are in the same room. But anyway, that's enough for this podcast. I've got stuff to do, so why don't you do all of that stuff that you do at the end of the podcast? You haven't actually told people to share this thing yet, which surprisingly. So
no, I thought I'd give them a week off, but now you've mentioned it.
Let's assume they've listened this far and do your share this podcast rant.
Yeah, you know, I was worried that I was pushing it a bit hard, so I thought I'd give them a week off. But yeah, as you've mentioned it, might as well just say, you know, if you enjoyed this podcast, why don't you share it with all of your friends? And why don't you review it on iTunes? And why don't you subscribe on all the places you can get this? In fact, as of this week, you can... In fact, I think it was as of last week. But as of very recently, you can now subscribe to this podcast on the TuneIn Radio app. So that's yet another place. There are many places you can subscribe to receive this automatically every week.
In theory, you can listen and subscribe on SoundCloud, but given our opening story today, perhaps they'll delete us. But in theory, we should still be there.
Yes, I am going to assume that you can still find us on SoundCloud and Mixcloud, Acast, Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes. I feel like there's one more.
Audio Boom.
Audio Boom. Of course, Audio Boom, which is the player you'll find embedded on our website, completemusicupdate.com, where you can find out yet more about CMU and things that are going on in the world of music. This has been the CMU podcast, presented by me, Andy Malt, and Chris Cook up there in Edinburgh. And it was produced by Matt Peaty.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, the CMU podcast is an Unlimited production in association with 7 Digital.
This week, PRS. That's not a thing. I'm Andy Malt, editor of CMU, CMU's business editor, Chris. I'm Andy Malt, editor of CMU. Oh, fuck's sake. This is going to be a long one. Right, third time.